Why won't they believe, Mark? Because we deal with known quantities, with knowledge we've accumulated up to now. We've just begun to learn about the water and its secrets. Just as we've only touched on outer space. We don't entirely rule out the possibility that there might be some form of life on another planet. Then why not some entirely different form of life in a world we already know is inhabited by millions of living creatures? We must have the proof.
No. Whether it's the Old Testament or Shakespeare.
It's puzzling.
You know what divine intervention is?
Spare us your Leninist philosophy just this once.
This is Watching Theology. Welcome to Watching Theology. I'm your host, Joe Johnson. And on this episode, I'll be going mostly solo, but I'm going to have a few minutes here where I have an interview with a special guest as we cover the film Creature from the Black Lagoon from 1954, directed by Jack Arnold. And before I do that, a couple notes about, just in general. And if you're new to Watching Theology, I really invite you to go back and watch some of the funnier, earlier episodes, because going solo is just not as funny. And I'm usually joined by Melissa, my wife, who adds a lot to the film, So I continue to recruit her, and between every episode, there's always a possibility that she'll join me on one of these episodes if I find a film that she really cares about. But on Creature from the Black Lagoon, this is a film that I came across several years ago, finally watching, always into the Universal monster movies, and I thought it was a great chance to talk about this film for several reasons. But before I do that, I want to just go ahead and remind everyone of the basic ground rules and the concepts that underline Watching Theology. Why is it what we do what we do? What are we trying to do with this? And basically, Watching Theology is aimed at reading a film, like it's a text, the same way that you would do a literary analysis on a text, hopefully not exactly the same. Film has its own language. But we are going to be looking at the theological, philosophical, and thematic text of a film. And we do have one basic assumption, is that some movies, you know, not all movies, but some movies speak, some movies have something to say, and one rule, and that is that we try and let the movie talk, or as maybe another way of saying that is we don't try and baptize the movies, we don't try and turn them into inspirational illustrations or something like that. So Creature in the Black Lagoon is maybe an odd one to look at, but if you look at this film, it's a fairly simple film. You've seen it before, even if you've never seen it, if you've seen Alien or King Kong, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But King Kong, is a really interesting film to look at from a basic plot point or basic plot structure of what makes a horror film. You need to have a monster, you need to have at least one woman, and you have to have people to kill, and that's what takes place in this film. Before we go any further, though, our usual disclaimers that this show will discuss plot points, spoilers, and endings. And also, very important, listening to a film isn't the same as green. That means we get to actually enter a conversation with a movie without having to say this movie represents everything I believe to be true. And that, of course, is the case with Creature from the Black Lagoon. Well, I want to go ahead now, and I just did a completed interview with, since Melissa wouldn't do it, I picked on our daughter, Elena. And Elena gave me this film, or gave me a copy of this film, and we've been fans of Creature ever since, albeit those first few years we weren't able to watch it together because the first time I put it in there, looking at that G for general audiences, thinking my four-year-old sophisticated daughter could handle this, it scared her to death. And I felt like a bad parent ever since. What I thought I would do is I'd bring Elena in and ask her a few questions, and please don't call CPS saying that I emotionally abuse my child, because some of the questions I do ask her, I ask because I want to talk about some of these issues later, and I was curious how she would respond this as a young film watcher. What is it that somebody would see watching a film like Creature from the Black Lagoon? What are the archetypes and stereotypes, and how does that affect somebody's viewing? There are a couple things out of that interview that I do want to expand upon afterward, and hopefully this will make more sense. Well, I'm very pleased right now on Watching Theology to be joined by Elena Johnson, who's going to help me read or talk about Creature from the Black Lagoon. So, Elena, how are you doing?
Good.
Yeah? Well, it's good to have you here. So, you want to talk about Creature a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is a movie that you bought me for Christmas, about 4 years ago? And when we first watched it, what happened?
It scared the heck out of me.
Well, let's talk about this movie a lot, and this is it's supposed to be a scary movie because there's this group. But let's talk about what the movie's about. So maybe you can tell our listeners what Creature from Black Lagoon is about. If they haven't seen it before, how would you tell them? How would you describe it?
I would describe it like, well, there are five scientists and one monster. This monster is from a black lagoon, and what happens is he is trying to steal David's fiance.
Kay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And these characters are trying to find this the rest of this fossil. Lucas, Mark, David, Kay, and Carl are all trying to find this fossil. They don't even notice that the monster is alive still, because they saw that hand and they think it's actually dead. But it's not. It's alive and it's living in the Black Lagoon.
Right. Okay. Well, when the movie starts, it says something right away. It's...
In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void.
He says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, Genesis 1:1.
Yeah, so it's from the Bible. But then he says other things about it. He says, the earth cools and over billions and millions of years. Is that part from the Bible?
No.
So where's that from?
It's just from this movie and...
It's different, you know, right? So
yeah, it's like a different Bible.
Sort of like that. So... As the movie goes on, I think there's some parts of this that are really interesting to me. And one of the things that, I don't know, what's your favorite movie of all time?
Well, I like a couple. I like King Kong and Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew. And my favorites of all times would probably be biography movies and stuff like that.
Well, let's talk about one you mentioned there, King Kong. So did you notice anything about this movie that was like King Kong?
Well, they're both black and white. And, well, they both are monsters. And so I think would probably make this sound all right would be like King Kong is trying to capture a girl too.
Right.
And Creature is trying to capture a girl.
Okay.
So they're both similar. They might be brothers. They might be friends. They might be cousins. Whatever. But it's just that they're trying to capture a girl. And Kay and Aunt Di-
Let's see, Anne, who's it? Anne
Barrow.
From King Kong?
Yeah, they might be cousins, or they might be friends, or sisters, or...
If they are, they have a lot to talk about afterwards, right? Because there's a lot of things that happen to each one of them that is very similar. So you have the people go to an island... And on the island, the natives there, they take her off the boat and give her to King Kong.
Yeah, in which they hang her up, and then King Kong comes, and she's halfway asleep and halfway awake.
Is there something like that in Creature, too, right? Because the creature comes onto the boat, the same way I remember that Anne Darrow gets carried off the boat, that in this one, also, she gets carried off a boat.
Yeah, they dive off the boat.
And it, okay, so in King Kong kills all the men, right? Any men that come by her? Or if any men come by King Kong, he tries to kill her. What about the creature? Does he kill the men or is he nice to the men?
He is very, very rude. He is not harmless. He is not nice, or he doesn't give people roses or tulips or daffodils or... He's trying to steal someone, which is very, very dangerous. If you don't even know this guy, it's very dangerous.
Now, why does the creature and why does King Kong attack the men but just steal a woman?
Because they want a wife. Because they don't have a wife, so...
Even though that she's a woman, a human, and like one of them's an ape and one of them's a gill man or a lizard man... They still want a human woman?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Not at all, because a human is way different than from a sea monster or a wild beast like Tarzan.
Yeah. Does it remind you of any other... It made me think of another movie or another story that I've seen before.
Frankenstein.
Frankenstein, that's a good one too.
Yeah, because he like has a flat head and he's a monster. And he wants like this girl who's turned into a monster, and then everybody gets all dramatic and drama, just like in Creature from the Black Lagoon.
What about the Disney movie? Does it make you think of any Disney movies? It makes me think of Beauty and the Beast.
It's a boy who wants a girl, just like in Creature from the Black Lagoon and Frankenstein and King Kong. But these people are very different from humans.
So if you look at the movie, do you think that they make the creature, he treats women and men differently?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think there's any reason why?
No, there's no reason why. It's like the men are black people and he's a white American and the girl is a white American and he wants to kill. He doesn't care for black. He wants to have freedom with white Americans.
What makes you say that? I'm curious why you say that. Why do you think that's different?
Well, Martin Luther King Jr., he is very helpful.
In this movie, though. Let's talk just about this movie, because you were talking about the movie that the creature, he attacks the white people differently than he attacks non-white people, and then he doesn't attack the woman at all. Why does he do it differently like that?
Well, he wants a wife, and so he wants to make sure the boys don't steal her. He is probably trying to get the girl and bring her back to his island so she can stay safe. Mm-hmm. He might think that the boys are bad and he's good and the girl is good.
I don't know. Yeah, it's worth asking. Okay, so let's say, is there anything about the movie that you want to talk about?
Well, not really, but how many brothers does...
There is what? Is it Z and Chico are two brothers that killed on the boat.
Yeah.
And then at the beginning of the movie, who gets killed?
Two other brothers.
And they might be brothers or something. Like, there's two people back at the
Tarzan.
Beginning of the movie.
They look like Tarzan.
It looks like a Tarzan movie. The creature kills first two people at the camp, and then he kills Z and Chico on the boat. And then he starts to attack the scientists. So what do you think about the Kay character as a person in the film? Did she have a lot to do with the movie, the woman in this film?
Pretty much.
Like, in what way?
Well, she wants to get married, but they get in this problem, and now they don't, and they get trapped, and Kay just goes for a swim sometimes, and that's how Creature gets involved with this problem.
Okay. So you have three main characters here. You have David and Kay and Mark. And David and Kay are supposed to get married sometime. But what about Mark? How does he fit into that?
He wants to steal Kay and have her as a fiance. And David is not going to fall for it. So
yeah.
Mark is just trying to annoy David so he can get Kay.
So they're friends, but they're kind of a little bit sometimes touchy about Kay, right? Well, there's a part in the movie where David says that we can't go into the Black Lagoon because we have Kay with us.
Going into unexplored territory with a woman.
I'm not afraid, David, and we've come this far.
Yeah, I know, but I keep remembering what happened to Carl's men.
That doesn't sound like the dedicated scientist talking, David.
Dedication doesn't mean risking the lives of others.
Oh, I've always found Kay was able to take care of herself.
Do you think the movie thinks it's okay for a woman to go into the Black Lagoon?
No.
Why not?
Because if a girl goes in there, that's how she got involved. Other boys might be in there and they actually steal her. And so they want to get Kay back, or they want her to stay safe.
So you agree with David that she shouldn't?
Yeah.
She shouldn't. Now, let me ask you this question a little differently. Now, when you grow up, you wouldn't mind being a scientist, right?
Yeah.
And so now let's say that you were Kay and you're on this boat and they say, Elena, we can't take you into the lagoon because you're a girl. What do you think? Would you agree with David or Mark on that?
David.
You would say, I'm a girl. I can't go where the other scientists go?
Actually, I would go with Mark. I think she shouldn't and should.
She shouldn't and should. What do you mean by that?
Well, she could choose to stay and stay safe or go and help figure out the fossil.
Okay. So she's, because she's a scientist, she should go too, though, or not. Okay. So what happens at the end? How does the creature of Black Lagoon end?
He dies and sinks and faints into the water, which actually means he died.
Is that like King Kong? Remember, King Kong gets shot off the top of the Empire State Building and falls down to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so remember at the end of King Kong, was it Carl Denham? What does he say about King Kong?
It wasn't the planes that killed him, it was Anne.
It was Beauty that killed the Beast, right?
Yeah.
What do you think about Creature? Do you think it's the same thing? Because he dies at the end. Do you think he died because of Kay?
I think it's the same sort of thing.
Okay. Well, do you have anything that you'd want to say to people if they were thinking about watching Creature?
Yeah.
They should?
Yeah.
Okay. 4-year-olds?
No.
Okay.
Like, 7 or up should probably watch it.
Okay.
If it's okay with their parents, but...
All right.
6 and up, no.
Okay. All right. Well, Lana, thank you for joining us, and thanks for helping us on Creature.
Thank you.
Here are some of the elements that we talked about, and you can tell that I sort of steered a bit of that conversation, but the similarity between archetypes, the King Kong, Beauty and the Beast archetype, Creature from the Black Lagoon follows that pretty tightly. It is the sense of there is at least a triangle of sorts, and in this case that there are two love triangles. There's Creature, David, and Kay, or David, Kay, and Mark, at the very least, and there are these intersecting love triangles that in each one, Kay is the object of some affection, object of some desire.
You be careful, David. We don't know what's down there.
I hope you're afraid for me, too, Kay.
Of course, Mark.
Although as a character, Kay is very lightly fleshed out. Her primary objective in this film seems to be screaming at the right moments and acting as a literary device to be something that all the men or the male, we're assuming the creature is a male, all respond to in some way, generally possessively. The one person who does not seem to view her possessively or specifically protect from a protector view is Mark, who is the blonde antithesis to David, the brunette representation of traditional nobility and patriarchy. And so in that, you can read something. But we are looking at a film from the 1950s, directed by Jack Arnold, who you may know him. Perhaps you've seen that name and not remember where, from several episodes of Gilligan's Island. So if you want to know what Creature from the Black Lagoon might have looked like in color, watch Gilligan's Island and the lagoon there. There are some times if you put those two things together, the imagery is very similar. There are several things to look about in that role. What is the woman's role in this film? What is the woman's role in King Kong or in Beauty and the Beast? And you can start to see that archetype as changes take place in the history of film, whether that be the original King Kong from the 30s, where Anne Darrow is more of an object. That archetype changes into the 1976, where she becomes an independent woman, into the 90s, where she becomes an empathetic and independent but also very very feminine. There's an evolution of that woman female archetype. This film, coming in the mid-50s, is particularly conservative and will actually seem more conservative than the 1933 King Kong or some of the other, or especially the 1991 Beauty and the Beast from Disney, or the 1940s version of Beauty and the Beast by Jean Cocteau, which is probably as sexual and independent as a woman in this archetypical situation gets. So looking at Creature from the Black Lagoon, you have, I think, by far the most conservative use of a woman in that archetypical triangle between Beauty and Beast and this and the male human suitor. But I think that's important for several reasons, in that when we look at 1950s films and the conservatism in and by requirement in American filmmaking, it's all here. You have that hierarchy of traditional values, the male protecting the woman, and the reckless male, the blonde reckless male getting what he deserves. There are a lot of moral repercussions. There is also in this one, I think, just as important is these this kind of assumptions of the place of science in the world. This is a scientific expedition, and it is built on an evolutionary perspective. This is a transitional film. As Elena and I talked about, it starts in Genesis 1. In the beginning, God created. But it quickly moves to a fade of the cooling Earth that cools for 15 billion years, and this transition from nothingness. It's not the ex nihilo creation of six-day creation. It's instead an evolutionary model in which, yes, God created the Earth, but after that, it was all amount of God formed the Big Bang to set everything in motion. But after that, everything else is an evolutionary structure.
Now, in their warm depths, the miracle of life begins. In infinite variety, living things appear and change and reach the land, leaving a record of their coming, of their struggle to survive, and of their eventual end.
And a lot of that philosophy and the accompanying theology comes out in this particular film. For example, the lungfish.
This lungfish, the bridge between fish and the land animal. How many thousands of ways nature tried to get life out of the sea and onto the land. This one failed. He hasn't changed in millions of years.
But more than just, say, the lungfish in this evolutionary model, you also have, and Elena said it in horror films, you have to have expendable people. And as we're watching the film, Elena made a point about none of those will die because they're the main characters. She knows the language of film in a traditional view that who can and can't die in a film. The main characters can't die. So we already have the setup for expendable characters. But you'll notice in this film, as you watch it, those expendable characters are the first four men who died, are the natives. Elena, unelegantly, said the black men versus the white men. But what she recognized in that, even in a black and white film, was there was a distinction between ethnicities. And I was a little bit surprised that she's picked on that. I think it may have something to do with just doing a Martin Luther King unit at school. She's been doing a lot of reading on Dr. King. And so she maybe is more sensitive to those issues than I would have expected her to be at eight. But what she did recognize, which is there, is that the expendable people were the natives, the non-white group. And that this is really clear, as David basically says, that the four men who died, and he doesn't say this in his statement, are expendable. Well, the four ethnic people who died are expendable. But if Dr. Thompson, kind of who has nothing to do in this film except stand around, if he dies, that's tragic.
Four men dead so far. If he dies, what a useless waste of experience and ability.
This evolutionary hierarchy is an extension of the evolutionary model of this film. The creature, this sort of trapped, unevolved, a missing link, something that goes in there. He's both the objective of this and the creature. He serves not only as an example of the evolutionary model, but the assumption that evolution is progressive, that it moves from disorder to higher order. One of the fundamental problems of an evolutionary model is that somehow the assumption that's progressive, and to the credit of many modern Darwinists, they recognize that that is not necessarily an imperative of the evolutionary model or of natural selection. But I think that suggestion, the implicit suggestion of evolution, is that it's a progressive evolution. So when you have the contrast between the creature and the ethnicity, the less evolved ethnic groups, as is implied in this film, and the scientists, the white scientists, the first really tragic killing is the attack on one of the doctors. And also that the creature is not just a creature who is a misformed or malformed human, but rather is a unevolved creature, a missing link that hasn't quite arrived. And that if this creature had continued to evolve, he would be some kind of human form that wasn't reliant upon this base sexual attraction to Kay, a killer, a slaughterer. There is something about him. He becomes an object of conquest. There isn't, I think, once you look at the Beauty and Beast archetype, There are a lot of sexual suggestions, and if you're, and this is a place where, of course, Melissa would have helped a great deal talking about the way that the camera is structured so that we get to gaze upon Kay. There are swimming scenes. Some of them are very, Elena mentioned Tarzan. There are some real Tarzan-like Johnny Westmiller scenes in this film as they swim through this. And I'm reminded of a clip I saw recently of some edited footage from the old Johnny Westmiller Tarzan films as Tarzan and Jane are swimming. Jane completely nude in these early films. The sort of eroticism of that. There is a kind of erotic bond, an erotic trio especially between Mark and David. They're swimming through this bay, through this lagoon, topless. Again, Melissa's influencing me. An aggressor, submissive positions where David has the camera and the light, and Mark has the spear gun. There is a sense of one is more aggressive, one is more somehow masculine than the other.
Whatever the species might be, if you let it alone, it won't bother you.
Yeah, maybe. But if you're wrong, this harpoon will correct any mistakes.
Mark, we're out for photographs for study, not trophies. This thing alive and in its natural habitat is valuable to us.
Well, why settle for a photo when we can get the real thing?
You don't sound like a scientist. You sound like some big game hunter out for the kill.
We may not be back home, David, but you're still working for me.
And those roles play out. There are those distinctions between Mark and David. But also there is the highly suggestive, the swimming, that the creature, this is actually one of the most amazing parts of this film, is the way that the creature doubles Kay when she swims. When she swims, she's on her own in this white swimsuit, and she swims across the top surface. The creature comes up and plays with her, flirts with her. And there is some element of seduction and capture that's going on in that one. In the water, he is hostile towards the males, but towards Kay, he's playful, frolic. He doubles and imitates and gazes upon her, which gives us, the viewer, a chance to gaze upon Kay differently. Although I think there could be a statement made if you were inclined to such viewing to say that David and Mark are first the objects of the gaze, to quote, to talk about some film theory on the way that camera highlights sexuality or submission, is that those two figures precede Kay. There is an implication or perhaps a contrast between those forms of sexual imagery, between those two swimming sessions. And we obviously see the difference between how the creature responds to the male and how the creature responds to the female.
Why? He could have killed you just as easily.
But he didn't.
But probably enough going down the Laura Mulvey Freudian perspective on that and the way that men and women respond in this. But there is, I think, for the enterprising young Universal Monster Series theorist, I think a lot of material in that aspect to talk about gender roles in this particular film and how they are indicative of, or how they are progressive in the Beauty and Beast model in that archetype. And that surely is the case here. There really isn't a ton more to say, except that Kay primarily exists as an object to see how men will respond to her. And her primary role in this is, as we mentioned earlier, TL. But I think that's probably enough to say about Creature from the Black Lagoon. I invite you to watch the film. It's a very enjoyable. There is a discussion. There's been a discussion for 8 or 9 years now about a remake, and there is one, I think, slated for 2010 or 2011, directed by, I can't remember his first name, but the son of Michael Eisner, the former head of Disney. And one of the things that's really interesting, especially if you've seen the remake of Robert Wise's Day the Earth Stood Still, is a move towards ecological disasters creating monsters. And Ross, I can't remember, Gary Ross, the screenwriter that's been brought on to write this new creature, is talking about making the creature, instead of an evolutionary product, which of course was the major science of the 1950s, or a war product, which was what Robert Wise dealt with in the 1950s, the Cold War era, and how that was updated from the 50s to the new millennium in The Day the Earth Stood Still, from Cold War to environmentalism. A similar process is expected to happen in Creature from Black Lagoon as a remake, from evolution, this kind of a real empiricism or naturalism that holds the day in the 50s, to an environmentalism that the creature supposedly will be the result of a major biohazard catastrophe of some sorts. It will be created by environmental pollution. And that, if for those of you who may recognize that story, it's been done before in a great Korean film, great Korean horror film called The Host, which is really worth watching. So with all that said, I had intended to do a mailbag, have a look through those letters, and I just didn't get them together, but I wanted to get an episode out for this month and hope to carry on at least one episode a month. And hopefully, if time stands still and Melissa isn't too swamped, we'll be able to somehow rack her in here and record an episode or two with me. Also, I want to remind you, if you're interested in some of the work that Melissa and I have done together, at least in written form, we do have available the book Watching, which you can find a link to that in the show notes for this or at the website for stevebrownetc.com, which is what the website that now hosts Watching Theology. So if you type watchingtheology.com or stevebrownetc.com, you can find us on there, a link to Watching Theology on there, and there will be information on how you could order that book. Hope it's something you find interesting, or it's available as a printed copy, and it usually takes about 2 weeks to get to you, or you can download it immediately as an electronic copy. So if that's something you are interested in, we do invite you to take a look at that. If not, well, fine. And so without further ado, I bid you good day.
Watching Theology is a biweekly program examining the theological, philosophical, and thematic world of the movies. Contact the show by emailing mail@watchingtheology.com or visit the website watchingtheology.com. Theme music is provided by Deerfoot from ilovedeerfoot.com.